I welcome all sorts of questions.
Please.
I can't really resist this one, but just before the reading, we met somebody who told us a story of something that happened at this very university recently, not in this department, having to do with the creative-minded people, but a professor was criticized apparently by students for mentioning death in conjunction. Music, and he happened to think a wife was in for this. It seemed a very odd thing, and we've only come from Phoenix to Tucson. When you come from Sweden, does it strike you as an amazing fact of modern life that someone could be criticized for actually discussing death with young people?
No, I think 15, 20 years ago, it was regarded as a subject you shouldn't touch, but that has changed a little in Sweden. I mean, death is almost popular now to talk about. For too long a time, it has been a suppressed fact. I mean, especially in hospitals and among medical people, they never mention death. They just hurry past the dying people. And so this has changed a little bit. And they are also given certain advice for how to talk with children about it. So, it has to do with Elsa Kubler-Ross and all that, you know. I thought America is always a little before us. I thought the talk about death was a little earlier here, but, well, it's a large country, so. I'm a little shocked. There's too much dead people in the poems I read, perhaps.
Well, that was the juxtaposition that struck me.
Yeah. It happened to be that way. Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about the translation process you go through?
Yeah, it's a very complicated process for certain poems. I mean, if we take this long poem I read about the TV preacher and all that, first it is written in Swedish, and then I sent it to Robin Fulton, who made the first version, which was full of mistakes, and he had real problems with this, because there are parts of the poem that simply are very strange to the Anglo-Saxon language. But we were exchanging letters about this. It was such a boring process. But at last we found a version that seemed to be completely readable. And then I today was sitting with Richard Shelton, and he discovered some mistakes in the translation. So, that was the last stage. And what I will do is probably to go back to Fulton and show him Dick's, not all, of course, but most of his corrections, and see how many he can accept. And, well, so. It is it's a typical translation process. Now, it could be still more complicated when you have very militant professors or something that think that they have absolute authority over the process and you don't dare to object at all. I have a personal relationship to almost all my translators. So it's rather easy to cooperate. It's a fantastic advantage, and well, it's not true about all translators naturally, but because sometimes you are translating to languages where you have no connection at all, but with the English translators I have a relationship with the Dutch and with the German, which are the and Hungarian. That are the languages where I have been mostly translated. Yeah.
Do you ever try and write in English?
Not directly, but I once made an English translation of a prose piece that was quite simple. The language was quite simple. Called Icelandic Hurricane. That was even published in a magazine called Pequod. But it's impossible, of course, to do a translation of poetry if you don't know the hidden dimensions behind a word. I mean, as a foreigner, I cannot possibly know that. I can have it explained to me word by word. This English word has this and this, but it's so complicated. Yeah. Somebody.
I discovered while you were reading that the poet is an artist of philosophy.
Why?
I say I discovered that a lot, that the poet is an artist of philosophy.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, because I am a very poor philosopher. I mean, I have difficulties to be philosophical in the abstract way. When I am a philosopher, I have to use my senses, and I have to see things in front of me, and so on and so on. And I'm sometimes criticized for being too naive and to have too little of abstractions in me. So I'm glad to be a sort of philosopher anyway.
I've noticed hearing you today and reading your poems in the past that they have a certain density about them, I guess in the language and other things, that I don't expect in translated poetry. To translate poetry, feel it somehow diluted, feel that something has dropped out in the translation, but not in these poems. Has anyone commented on that to you before, and do you have any explanation for why that might be?
I think it has to do with the translators are poets themselves. I mean, Fulton is an experienced poet, and his ambition is, of course, to do something that is a poem in English and not a translation. For instance, of course, the poems are a little denser in Swedish because Swedish rhythm is difficult to get over into English. But I'm glad to hear that they have this quality.
Do you have any favorite poets of your own, contemporary?
Oh, many, many, many. I mean, it goes up and down. Certain days you like somebody, and the next day he's out, but among the 20th century poets, if we should stick to them, I think.
Who's your favorite dead poet?
Oh, no, that's still more impossible to say. I mean, what shall I say? I'm influenced by all these heroes, Eliot and Trakl and Whitman and yes, Emily Dickinson. Yes, partly, very much. Partly, I think he's too philosophical or abstract. I mean, there are certain poems I think are wonderful, but he's difficult to translate because something. The music in his poetry gets lost very much, and only the philosophy remains when you translate Wallace Stevens. That's my impression.